Beneath my fur coat, I'm wearing basically nothing. A silver silk chiffon bit and a G-string. Apparently, it's what an aristocratic Fey housewife would wear to the Chateau de Rêve. I want to keep the fur coat on, but I know that's not in the cards, because Lady Egraine Lyoners does not give a single Fey fuck if people stare at her exposed nipples or ass. With regret, I drop the fur coat in the boat and fold my arms over my chest. I turn to the agents. Raphael is dressed in a crisp shirt and a waistcoat, clothing that can at least somewhat protect him from the sea air and allow him to hide a few weapons. Male spies have a real advantage in that regard. Freya is wearing the black and white uniform of a chambermaid from the Chateau de Rêve, which apparently means a short skirt, a clingy black top, and not much else. And Vivian, in her cabaret dress? A fishnet would be less revealing. Let's just say that despite what she declared in class, there are quite obviously no knives in her knickers this evening. Raphael carries what looks like a white laundry bag full of gear and weapons. He hands it off to Freya.
Ready?
The four of us can't be seen walking together, so Freya takes off first, heading for a long stone stairwell that zigzags up the rocky hill. Partway up the stairs is a landing with dark archways, the servant's entrance. Freya and Vivian will be let in by our contact down there. Vivian turns back to us and nods once, then takes off up the stairs after Freya. My nerves flutter as I stare at the castle. The shimmering stone and sharply peaked spires gleam like silver-blue blades against the night sky. Raphael glances back at me as I walk, and I know he's trying to assess how I'm feeling. He was nervous about me coming on the mission, and worried that I'm going to fuck this up. If we're caught in the castle, we'll be tortured, slowly and sadistically, until we betray every last crucial piece of information that will leave MI-13 in ruins. And it will all happen under the wicked and watchful eye of Prince Talon. I'm dead silent as we start to walk up the stairs, climbing the rocky slope that overlooks the sea. At the weathered stone landings, torches light the way. The light and shadows twist in a ghostly dance on the stairs. We pass by the dark arches inset into the rocks, where Freya and Vivian have already slipped inside. We keep going up, heading for the guests' main entrance. As we walk higher up the stairs, the sea wind whips over me, stinging my skin. I feel pretty much naked in this dress.
Are you all right with this?
If I weren't, it would be a bit late for you to find out.
You look tense.
I focus on relaxing my jaw. That's where my anxiety shows up, according to Raphael. The stairs have led us up the hill, where a wrought silver gate is inset into towering stone walls. Through the gate, a garden spreads out. Moonflowers, black roses, blood flowers, and hellebores bloom, bathed in the faint glow of the palace itself. The pale stone towers and turrets rise high above us, pocked with narrow, warmly lit windows. If everything has gone according to plan, our contact already has our names on the guest list. Raphael rings a bell next to the gate. A few moments later, a guard in ceremonial armor walks up to the entrance.
Yes, how can I help you?
We're Lord Agravain Lyoners and Lady Egraine Lyoners of Broceliander. We're expected.
Raphael slips his hand into his pockets and pulls out two cream-colored invitations with silver writing.
Here.
We wait for a moment as the guard inspects the invitations. Finally, the guard swings the gate open, and we step inside. My heart pounds as we cross into the garden to the castle doors. Wraith has thoroughly drilled the many Fey torture methods into our heads, some of which literally involve drilling. And by this point, I wonder if he's done us all a disservice. It's hard to think clearly through the raw fear vibrating through my bones, and fear can lead to terrible decisions. We cross through the garden to a steeply peaked oak door to the palace, which must stand 20 feet high. Before we left on this mission, we'd memorized every inch of the layout of this place, but I didn't quite have a sense of exactly how massive it would be. The door swings open before us, and a Fey butler stands in the entryway, his dark hair slicked back. He's wearing a black velvet doublet and a sword at his waist. He shoots me a disdainful look.
Your invitations?
Raphael hands them over again. The butler motions for us to enter, and I don't thank him as I walk past. Lord and Lady Lyoners would not debase themselves by talking to the help. Arm in arm, we walk slowly through a chandelier-lit stone corridor, following the sound of music. Raphael's powerful, calm presence is reassuring, his arm warm and sturdy against mine. Lady Egraine Lyoners might be frustrated by her husband, but all I feel is a powerful magnetic pull toward Raphael. In here, the air is heavy with the scent of night-blooming jasmine. At last, we reach the large ball. My pulse races as I take in the resplendent scene before us. Arm in arm, we enter a hall with soaring ceilings and walls made of what looks like twisted, bone-white tree boughs. The branches soar 200 feet high, meeting above us in a Gothic-style rib-vaulted ceiling. Lights float in the air and glitter from the arboreal walls. Ivory-white columns flank a stage with diaphanous curtains on either side. Around the hall, some of the guests sit in chairs, drinking cocktails. Others stand on the marble floors, arms draped lazily over each other, watching the stage. A balcony sweeps above us, where people drink and dance. I glance at Raphael and find his expression, as ever, difficult to read. He's watching the stage, towering over me. Slowly, he glances down at me, and I wonder if he's noticed that I'm still not relaxed. The trick here is to observe absolutely everything while looking like you're half drunk, swaying to the music and lost in the moment. The job requires me to be a placid lake on the surface, with roiling undercurrents beneath. Raphael gives me a lazy half-smile. Taking me by the hand, he leads me to a chair facing the stage, sits, and pulls me into his lap. Leaning against his broad chest, I breathe in his intoxicating scent, the rich, woodsy smell of him tinged with the leather of bound books. The feel of his sculpted body against me helps me relax, which was probably his plan. He slides his arm around my waist. I try to focus on the show and discreetly keep an eye out for the prince. The show itself is enchanting. 20 fey dancers dressed in shimmering, translucent robes swirl on the platform, their movements smooth as liquid, their skirts flashing, showing a leg, a thigh, a glimpse of curves. 4 of them hang from crimson ribbons that dangle from the ceiling, performing complex somersaults above the crowd. All is expertly accompanied by the orchestra. This place feels like a cathedral of lust. Raphael rests his hand casually on my hip, and I am acutely aware of the heat radiating from his palm through the thin material of my dress. My mind slides back to our kiss in the lake. Was that the mead at work that night? And the sultry summer air? The enchantment of the lake? When I glance at him, for just a moment, his eyes dip down. His fingers flex on my hips, his jaw tightening with tension. He drags his gaze away, back to the stage. Right. We're here to be on the lookout, to search for those subtle signs of alarm among the Fae. A lapse of attention could mean death. He shifts me slightly, then lowers his face near mine.
Do you see the guards?
I scan the hall and spot 8 guards, dressed inconspicuously as staff, but hiding short swords within their suits. Movement in the upper balconies makes me suspect that there are at least 2 more bowmen, their eyes trained on the crowds. A lot more security than our sources reported, and there's an obvious reason for it. My blood runs cold as Royal Prince Talon, the Dreamstalker, prowls into the hall. Raphael's fingers twitch against my skin. With an insouciant swagger, the prince towers over the rest, looking like a god. He has black hair, with a few strands at the front that almost reach his chiseled jawline. His full lips curl in a faint smile. I feel the power of him whisper over my half-naked skin. Rumor says that he might be one of the only people in existence with real, primal magic. 2 gorgeous women are draped over his elegant suit of deep blue and green, the colors of the sea. The many rings that gleam from his fingers probably cost hundreds of millions. My heart races. His eyes are so dark they're nearly black, framed by black eyelashes and thick eyebrows. Tan skin, high cheekbones, tattoos that climb his neck. His striking beauty is hard to look away from. I force myself to glance at the stage again, but I keep watching him from the corner of my eye. In the periphery of my vision, I see him drop into a chair at the head of a long table. A blonde woman falls into his lap. I steal a quick look and see him lazily stroking his fingers over her ribs, watching the stage. He oozes seduction. Is that how he gets into people's dreams? They dream of sex and there he is? Except when he arrives, he's not there to deliver pleasure, but pain. Someone hands him a crystal glass of wine, and he leans back, taking a sip. Women dance in his line of vision, writhing sexual movements. The prince is the obvious apex of the group. And not just the group. Everyone in the hall seems to focus their attention on him. As much as the show is wonderful, the Dreamstalker is the real star. And all he has to do is lounge rakishly in a chair with a woman in his lap and soak up the attention like a black hole.
Madam? Sir?
A woman in a black uniform leans down.
Would you like a champagne cocktail?
I nod curtly, like Lady Lyoners would. From my position on Raphael's lap, I scan the rest of the room. Raphael leans into my throat, his lips against it.
Exit strategies?
Heat from his breath warms my skin. He pulls me in a little closer. I see 3 exits. The door we came in, the door used by the servants to bring drinks, and the door by the stage that probably leads backstage. Surveying the hall, I notice a few more armed Fae and make a mental note of their position. I yearn for my own knives, which were impossible to hide in this outfit. The waitress saunters over with a tray, carrying two champagne flutes. She hands one to me and one to Raphael. I flick her away. Raphael's silver eyes dance with amusement, and a faint smile curls his full lips. He glances over my shoulder at the prince, and I follow his gaze. All eyes are on the beautiful prince, so no one notices us gawking. There are three men and five women in the group circling the Dreamstalker. One of them has an insignia we memorized in Rites class, marking him as the major general in charge of the Northern Army. His name is Shaylin, and according to our intel, he's a close confidant of the prince. He leans back against a column, taking a sip of wine. His silver hair hangs down to his chin. The chatelaine of the castle stands nearby, recognizable by the sigil on his jacket, embroidered with golden skeleton keys. He's responsible for managing the grounds of the castle and all its defenses. Raphael pulls my face close to his.
I want to follow one of the guards, but I need you to stay alert here. Keep your attention on the prince.
I slip out of his lap, and he stalks away. I grip the champagne flute. Dropping down into the chair, I glance at the prince. As he sips his wine, I realize I can see Mordred's dark beauty in his features. The sharp cheekbones, the sensual lips, the dark almond-shaped eyes. All he needs is a spiked crown, and I'd be looking right at the image of one of those gruesome portraits. The House of Morgan. I glance at the Dreamstalker and see his dark eyes searching in the crowd. He's not looking at me, and yet I feel the full intensity of his attention like an electrical charge. He cocks his head, staring at the stage again. A lock of his black hair rests on one of his sharp cheekbones. A chill ripples over my body. A deep, murmuring voice floats through my thoughts, and my heart skips a beat. It's the phantom, sensual voice I often hear. He's speaking in Fae about a party he threw, and the heat of desire that made bodies shimmer with the otherworldly colors of twilight. And the flame-haired woman so obsessed with the pleasure of his tongue that she stripped naked the moment they were alone together. He delighted in the poses she struck for him that night, bearing herself in every way. She likes it when he tugs her hair. And yet, he feels something is missing. My pulse starts to race. It's him, isn't it? The voice I've been hearing all these years when I'm alone and tired. The sometimes violent, sometimes sensual voluptuary who speaks to me when I'm in that liminal space between waking and dreaming. Of course it would be him, the Dream Stalker. It makes sense. Dreams are woven from our worst fears and greatest desires. And that's what his voice has always been in my mind. My heart is beating wildly out of control. I've been hearing his poetic, dark, and often absolutely filthy thoughts since I was about 18. Oh, gods. Sometimes I actually liked hearing his voice. Sometimes it turned me on. How can it be? My telepathy only works by touch. How could I have heard his thoughts all these years, even when we were thousands of miles apart? He suddenly seems to tighten, his thoughts more aware. They seem to be searching for something. For me. We're close enough for him to sense me. A small crowd of dancers gets between us, blocking me from his view. From what I know of Prince Talon, he can weave dreams and nightmares, harvest the fears and fantasies from the darkest recesses of our minds. I don't want him noticing me at all, and apparently, he's already been in my head. Right now, I fear his consciousness is brushing against mine, exploring my secrets.
Who's in my mind? Who are you, telepath?
I can feel his magic searching for me, seeping into my subconscious like ink in water, exploring all the feelings in my psyche. As he delves into my emotions, a rush of confusing images floods my skull. Mom hurling a glass at me, and it hits my forehead. I'm reading a book in the bookstore, desperate to be somewhere far, far away. I pull my mind away, visibly flinching. From what I understand, he's not a telepath, but he's drawn to emotions. And as he tunes into them, he brings up memories I've tried to bury. I glimpse him through the crowd, twirling his wine glass and looking utterly bored. Shadows carve his cheekbones. His cold expression is impossible to read, but his dark eyes turn my blood to ice. I don't think it's Oberyn who's destined to destroy Avalon Tower. I think it's this beautiful Dreamstalker elegantly lounging in a chair. With his glittering rings and relaxed posture, he looks decadent. Libertine. Someone who could seduce you to your own death. I can feel his malign presence from here, coiling over my skin like smoke, searching for signs of the person who invaded his thoughts. With a racing heart, I slip further into the crowd, blending in. From the corner of my eye, I see the prince whisper something to the woman in his lap. She gets off him, and he stands, turning to the door. Shit. I have a feeling he's heading back to his room to fuck that woman. I need to warn Freya. One of the women in his group catches his sleeve, smiling at him, imploring him to stay, buying me precious time. I keep my gait slow and unhurried so as not to attract attention, but I'm on my way to the corridor. Beneath vaulted ivory arches, I hurry toward the stairwell. The prince's chambers are on the third floor, and that's where I'll find Freya. I just want to make sure I get there before Talon does. Lifting the hem of my dress, I bound up the stairs two at a time. On the third floor, I push through a door on a landing. Mullioned windows stretch up to a high ceiling, and vines grow over the stones. I stumble, pretending to be drunk. There are guards standing outside Talon's door, and I need a good cover. His door is 20 feet tall and painted green, with two enormous guards standing out front.
Excuse me? I seem to be a bit lost. Can you direct me to my room?
I talk just loudly enough for Freya inside to hear. He smirks at me, amused by my drunkenness.
Which room is yours?
I don't recall exactly. It's the one with the tapestry of the Diving Hawk.
Diving Hawk was our code word to indicate that the prince is coming.
I'm not sure where that is, but if you want to wait for me down at the main hall, I can help you look when my shift is over.
The door opens and Freya steps out, a bulk of sheets in her hands. She looks at me.
Can I help you?
She's lost. Can't find her room.
Oh, come with me, madam.
She rolls her eyes at the guard, and he grins at her. She grabs my arm, tugging me close to the stairs.
The prince left the cabaret. I didn't know if he was coming up here.
Fine. The map isn't there. I looked through every inch of his room.
In the spiral stairwell, she pulls me aside.
I think I saw him earlier. The dream stalker. He scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
At some point, I'd have to tell her what happened, but there isn't time now. As we get closer to the lowest floor, she goes ahead. There's no reason for a chambermaid to be hanging out with a lady. When a minute has passed, I make my way outside to a balcony overlooking the sea. Below us, the waves pound on the black rocks. The three of them are already waiting.
It's not in his room.
Not in the vault either. And we checked the logbook. The prince hasn't deposited anything lately.
Under the moonlight, he looks out over the dark ocean. With his dark expression, it doesn't take telepathic powers to figure out what he's thinking. This map was his one hope of finding his sister. For Raphael, these maps weren't just an MI-13 mission. Finding the prisons in these maps might help him recover the only family he has left.
We need to leave.
Wait. Maybe the map is in the Chatelaine's chambers. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Freya glances back through the doors.
Raphael, there are 1,000 places the map could be. We can't bumble around here. If we stay much longer, the scheduled coast patrol will block our escape. And at some point, someone might wonder why Vivian isn't getting on stage.
Go down to the boat. If I'm not there in 10 minutes, leave without me.
Absolutely not. We're not leaving without you.
That was an order. I'm going to check the Chatelaine's chamber, and you're going to wait for me outside. If any guards see you, leave. If I take longer than 10 minutes, leave.
He pushes through the glass doors into the hall and is gone. Vivian folds her arms.
Fuck that! I'll stay as lookout down the hall from the office to see if anyone's coming.
I saw the Chatelaine in the cabaret. I'll go back and make sure he doesn't leave.
Freya blinks and shakes her head.
This is stupid. But fine. I'll keep an eye on the palace's security.
As I stride back into the hall, I resume the character of Lady Lyoners, only slightly more drunk now. Deep inside, I know Freya is probably right. Raphael has no idea where the map is, and he's acting out of pure desperation. Maybe Prince Talon isn't even keeping it in his castle. Wildly searching for a single parchment in this enormous place is a doomed endeavor. But I can't get Raphael's devastated expression out of my mind. Now that the Dream Stalker isn't present, a few of the other guests have approached the group, trying to sweet-talk their way into his inner circle. The Chatelaine is still there, swilling a red cocktail. At the very least, he won't be barging in on Raphael ransacking his chambers. A sudden, dangerous idea pops into my mind. What if someone in that group knows where the map is? If they do, maybe I can find out. Feigning a drunken sway, I saunter closer to their table. I breathe deeply,
concentrating. Drawing out the frantic, violet-tinged magic, I let it spread through my body. As the magic billows through me, I sense the feelings of the people around me. I can't read their thoughts without physical contact, but I can feel them. Thousands of emotions and ideas and desires waiting to be found, waiting to be seen. Dancing by their table, I try to appear like just another hedonistic fae. I sweep past them, letting my fingers drift very delicately over a man's shoulders.
Maybe Aenor would agree to invite one of those dancers to our bed tonight. Perhaps if I suggest it, like something that I'm doing as a favor for her.
I peer a little deeper into his mind, but don't sense anything about the map. I sashay along, pretending to be mesmerized by the show, and brush against a woman in a green dress.
Oh, I shouldn't have drunk so much meat. This is the fifth day in a row I've had too many bowls.
These invasive thoughts sweep around the inside of my skull, deafening. Each one carries with it unfamiliar emotions, strange images from people's pasts. It's like having a loud conversation that I'm not a part of in my head. I can barely focus, but I have to keep going. The tip of my finger touches another man.
That bastard Orhan. I'll throw him to the wolves. He thinks he can do that to me.
And another woman.
I miss Alarise so much.
And another woman.
Mother, why did you leave us? The flickering of your funeral pyre still lingers in my vision, interfering with my sight. It's been 2 months, but I can't seem to move on. I still remember our last talk. Well, our last fight. It feels like we were always fighting, and about the most trivial things. Like our final conversation, about the skirt I was wearing of all things. If I had known it would be the last time I would hear your voice, I would have changed the skirt. I would have burned that skirt just to see you smile. I want to recall our happier times. I remember how hurt you were that summer dance, when I refused to dance with you. Back then, I was so worried about what my friends would say. And now, I would give anything for one last dance.
I wrench myself away from the woman, heart thudding. She's talking to someone across the table, saying something inane about the primrose and violet salad, and her turbulent thoughts still whirl in my mind, intermingling with those of the rest of the people I touched. Almost automatically, I move forward and touch someone else.
I wish I were dead. I will never forget the humiliation and embarrassment. Why? Why have I done it? That waitress told me, enjoy your meal. And I told her, you too. You too. As if she were also eating a meal. That smile she gave me. That damnable, pitying smile. And now I see her across the room, talking to another waitress. I know what she's doing. She's telling her about me. How I said, you too, like an imbecile. Now they're laughing, as they should. I wish I were dead. Did anyone else hear me say it? I can never show myself in public again. I should walk off the cliff into the ocean before I do something even more mortifying. Oh gods, now I've spilled wine on my trousers! Why me? What have I done to deserve this?
And I stumble away as the anxieties churn and roil in my mind like a storm. I don't remember why, but I touch someone else.
He calls me a friend, a cousin. But how much does he really respect me? Lumos, take this to my room. Or Lumos, go get us some food. Or Lumos, make sure my horse is ready. I'm third in line to the throne. Why order me around and not the others in his retinue? If he were no longer alive, I'd be second in line to the throne, and he's never managed to have children, which surely is a sign from the gods. Well, I won't take his disrespect much longer. Next time he calls me to do something, I'll tell him to do it himself. Ha! He should be serving me. That would be a shock for him. Talon, why don't you find us a couple of girls for company? You know what, Talon? Why don't you carry my satchel, you dog? Of course he's the prince, but I'm his cousin. And father used to tell me that a man has to have a backbone, or people will tread all over him. And he was right. It's time for me to grow a backbone.
I totter away, not sure of who I am, just knowing this is what I do. I touch people, and I take their thoughts as my own. I am all of them. I reach out to take another one.
I just can't stop thinking about her, no matter how much I try. Even right now, with the dancers on stage, all I can do is watch her. Those turquoise eyes, that sweet smile. The way she tilts her head when she's amused, like she's doing right now. How do I tell Elora how I feel? Do I show her the poems I wrote about her? Oh, gods, even the mere idea makes me shudder. Those terrible poems. If anyone ever found them, I would die of shame. I should burn them. Except that would be burning my own love. Perhaps I should send Elora flowers from a mysterious admirer, a dozen forget-me-nots every evening so she always remembers me. And then, one night, after she's been showered with hundreds of blooms, I will tap on her door with a bouquet of a dozen more vibrant violet-blue petals. And then she will know. Oh, God, she will know that I am a creepy and deeply obsessed man. That's all she will know. Oh, Elora. For years we have been friends. How can I stretch my hand across to meet yours beyond friendship, reaching for something more?
My body is gone, and I don't know who I am any more than a fog of thoughts. Am I eating strawberry cake right now, or drinking mead? Am I even here, or is this a dream? I had a purpose once, and a name, but I can't remember either. It's Lumos, right? The prince's cousin and third in line to the throne. I need to get back to my body, but I can't find it, and there are so many thoughts sweeping through my skull. I'm lost in a labyrinth of emotions. I'm not Lumos, that's absurd. I don't even like Lumos. Once he grabbed my ass in the hall to impress Talon. No, wait, he didn't grab my ass. He grabbed someone else's. Who am I? I search for myself, but I'm too far gone.
Nia, snap out of it.
A beautiful man shakes me, and I blink at him in confusion through the cacophony in my head. Who is this man? I don't really want to pay attention to him, but he's gorgeous, and he looks worried. The chorus of voices in my skull is deafening, but I want to reassure him that I'm fine. Except that I don't feel fine. I don't even feel like I can talk right now, like my lips aren't mine. Or maybe that I have too many mouths. If I open my mouth, 20 people will talk at once.
Nia, what happened?
There is alarm in his alluring silver eyes, and worry. He's worried about me. And it touches something in me. Raphael. I like Raphael, though I shouldn't. I might not know who I am yet, but I'm sure of that. The man with silver eyes is Raphael, and whenever I look at his gorgeous face, I go weak. So many thoughts. He frowns, then his eyes widen.
You read someone's thoughts? Here?
Not someone's, everyone's.
Oh, gods, why?
His hand is on my waist, holding me up. I lean into him. I wanted to find the map for your sister. And I thought... I let my head rest against his broad chest for a moment, not entirely sure what I'm doing. Am I supposed to be avoiding this gorgeous, strong man? At last, a clear thought pierces the chaos. I know where it is.
Where?
It's in my leather satchel.
Nia, you don't have a satchel.
Talon is always trying to get me to carry his stuff. He's ordering me around. Lumos, do this. Lumos, take that. Lumos, watch my documents.
Who the fuck is Lumos? Do you mean Conte Lumos de Morlun?
Yes, that's my title, you fool. I shake my head. No. Oh, no, wait. I'm not Lumos. He's an ass-grabbing twat. But he has the map. I lean in closer to Raphael. See that guy with the bright red hair? That's Lumos, and that's his satchel. The map is in there.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Talon made me told him to carry it. It's hard to concentrate, to formulate the words. It's there. The map is there.
Okay, lower your voice. I'll get the satchel, and then we get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, he's probably right. We should leave. Though I don't remember why. I stare at the chandeliers. He lets go and I almost collapse. It takes all of my concentration to control my limbs. It feels like I have 30 arms, 30 legs. I half expect the people around the table to lose their balance as I stumble, because we're all linked, aren't we? I pull my gaze back down just in time to see Raphael walking idly past Lumos. In a swift, casual move, he grabs the satchel from the marble floor. He's by my side in the next few breaths. He grabs my wrist.
Okay, let's go. Nia, let's go. What are you looking at?
Elora, isn't she wonderful? Do you think she would ever love me back? Gripping my wrist, Raphael pulls me toward a stairwell. He doesn't understand my heartbreak over Alora. How could he? Who could understand a friendship like this?
Nia, do you think you can run down the stairs? We're going to get out through the servants' entrance.
I think so. But I don't even know who I am. I'm sitting in a chair with my eyes shut, holding my head in my hands, hoping to anchor it and keep it in place.
Raphael, we have to go.
Raphael sits next to me, stroking my back.
Just give Nia a moment.
It takes me a few deep breaths to remember. Huh. Nia might be me.
What's wrong with her? What has she done?
She'll be fine.
Why don't you tell me the fucking truth? She's overdosing on some kind of magic, isn't she? I can feel it emanating from her, except it isn't sentinel magic because there was no veil in there. So what exactly is happening?
Telepathy. She used it on too many people at once. But you cannot tell anyone she has diametric magic. We need her. They will kick out anyone with two powers. They'll say she's going to be another Mordred. She's not trained in telepathy, so she didn't know the dangers. We've been trying to suppress that magic, but I guess she thought it might be useful. Vivian, we need her.
How many minds has she read? Three? Four?
I don't know. It might be more than four.
I think it's 12. Or 13. It's hard to count because they keep jumbling together. I open my eyes to find Raphael, Vivian, and Freya all staring at me, stunned. What?
Please tell me you didn't.
Raphael's fingers flex on my back.
Telepaths aren't supposed to read more than one or two minds close together because they can lose themselves in the sea of consciousness. It can't have been 12.
At least 12.
That's impossible.
There was Lumos and Gaia and Belrior and Calixto and Nia.
You're Nia.
All right, I'm Nia. Anyway, there were at least 12. 13 including Nia, but I guess she doesn't count? I mean, me doesn't count. I doesn't count. I frown. That doesn't sound right either, but words are confusing. So many of them. Nia knows a lot of languages, but Calixto knows different languages, and so does Gaia, and the grammar and words keep getting muddled in my mind.
Gods, we need a different getaway plan. She won't be able to control the veil like this.
This room is all shadows and stone arches, like a crypt beneath a cathedral. Why?
Because we need to go through the veil.
Okay. We did that once. We can do it again. Raphael looks at me.
I agree.
Raphael, she can't get us through. If what she says is true, she's gone. It's a marvel she can still talk, but we don't know who she even is anymore. And there's no way in hell she can focus enough to use her sentinel powers.
Yes, I can. I know it's true. I feel both my powers pulsating inside me, awake.
She can. She'll get us through. There's no other way in any case. The royal prince has probably already found out that his map is gone. We have to get out of here tonight.
The map? We have the map? He flashes me a dazzling smile.
We do. Thanks to you.
Okay, good. Raphael slides his arm around my waist and helps me stand. I stare at the torchlight flickering on the walls. Where are we?
In an empty room, in the lower level of the Chateau des Rêves.
We step out to one of the hallways in the chateau. I'm completely disoriented, don't even recall how we got here. But Raphael leads us confidently. We pass a small kitchen and a threadbare woven rug. The ceilings are lower than the ones upstairs. We walk past numerous rooms identical to the empty crypt we just left. A coat of arms hangs on one wall. I try to keep pace with them, but my head is still shrieking. I see the world through a haze, but Raphael's arm around my waist steadies me. Raphael stops short.
Hang on. We missed a turn.
Are you sure?
Yeah, we need to go back.
He turns around.
Come on.
I follow him, past the threadbare rug, the coat of arms, and 20 or more other rooms. So many rooms.
I think we missed a turn again.
There were no turns, Vivian.
What are you talking about? There were a dozen turns. Where's Freya?
My heart thuds. Freya is not with us anymore.
Something's wrong.
She probably went outside and didn't notice that we weren't with her. Come on, I'll lead. Through there, see?
She points at a fork in the corridor that we somehow missed before. Now Vivian takes the lead, marching confidently on. We walk past the coat of arms again.
We were here just a second ago.
No, and you're the last person we should be listening to.
No, see?
I point at the coat of arms.
It's the same antlers, and that same threadbare rug. We keep walking back and forth.
Raphael's fingers tighten on my waist.
We're disoriented somehow. Have we been drugged? All we need to do is get outside.
Well, we came from the left passage, so we should probably take the right.
I start walking, but everything seems to be moving slowly. Much too slowly. I'm walking as fast as I can, but I can hardly budge. I look down and realize that my feet are stuck in the threadbare rug, and with each step, I'm getting pulled back. The rug has become a strange, muddy goo.
I'm sinking in the rug!
Don't shout. Hang on. Where's Vivian?
It's just the two of us now, and I'm knee-deep in the rug and sinking faster.
We must have been drugged.
Raphael's grip around my waist is solid, but somehow I'm sinking and he's not.
No. The Castle of Dreams has become the Castle of Nightmares. This is the Dreamstalker's work!
It's obvious now. Prince Talon must have realized his map is missing, and now he's trapped us.
No way. He doesn't even know who we are.
He doesn't need to.
I've visited a dozen mines, mines belonging to the prince's confidants, enough to learn things about him.
He can sense people's subconscious when they're nearby. We're trying to get out and we're scared of being caught. That makes us different from everyone else in this place. He's honed in on our minds and wrapped us up in this dream.
Raphael's grip tightens around my waist.
And he knows where we are?
I don't think so. Not yet. But if we don't get out, they'll find us eventually.
I'm up to my thighs now in the liquidized rug.
Raphael, I'm drowning in this!
It's in our minds. Nia, even dreams can be controlled if you know it's a dream.
I can't get out of this!
Raphael shifts his hold on me, taking my arm in a vice-like grip.
Don't move.
His muscles flex, and he slowly pulls me free. The viscous rug gives way.
We have to get out of here. Now.
Hang on.
He shuts his eyes, and his black eyelashes cast shadows on his cheeks.
Concentrate. This is in our mind, right? So try to picture us finding the way out. Picture us finding Vivian and Freyr on the way.
I do as he says, closing my eyes. It's hard to concentrate, but I do my best to imagine us reunited with Vivian and Freyja, grabbing them by the hands and fleeing the castle.
Okay.
Come on.
He's holding my hand as we walk. And there, at the far end of the hall, is the door that leads to the stairs and the sea. I can even see the glittering waves through the window.
It's working.
Raphael nods. Turning, we see Vivian and Freyja running toward us, a wall of flames roaring down the hall behind them. Smoke billows, stinging my lungs and eyes. A fit of coughing racks my body. And though I know it's just a dream, I can't make the flames go away. The heat sears my skin. We're going to burn. Someone grabs me by the wrist and I'm running, my eyes streaming from the smoke. Is the door gone again? We're trapped in a waking nightmare. We're lost again. We can't find the door. Soon, I fear we'll be back at the beginning, back to the threadbare rug and the coat of arms. The Dreamstalker is toying with us. We're his puppets and he is pulling the strings.
No, not there. Over here.
Raphael pulls me to a random kitchen door. He yanks it open and salt air washes over me. A spray of stars twinkles in the night sky. Stone stairs zigzag down to the sea. We're free. I inhale, the wind whipping at me. The night air is incredibly clear, and I can fill my lungs at last. Raphael has led us out of the nightmare. I blink slowly, trying to focus on Rythe, who is standing at the lectern, stroking his blonde beard. Light streams in the tall, mullioned windows over the rows of students. The seneschal drones on. I think he's talking about the veil. It's been 4 days since we returned from our mission on Jersey, but my head still feels foggy. Even now, the residual thoughts of a dozen other people fill my mind like static, and I get terrible, debilitating headaches. My only respite is the constant supply of herbal tea from Tana. It's nearly impossible to concentrate, which is unfortunate. The culling is coming up fast, and I'm struggling to learn anything, despite staying up till 2 a.m. every night studying.
No wall in history has ever been as effective as the veil. MI-13 agents can't swim or tunnel underneath or even fly over the veil. There are some rare magical items, orbs and crystals and such, that provide some protection from veil magic, but they're unstable, and many die trying to use them. Oberon's mages keep the veil raised, stopping humans from invading their territory. Unfortunately, our only way of reliably going through the veil is with our sentinels. At the moment, we have only one qualified sentinel. As my brilliant niece Ginevra and I were just discussing, our command has been forced to resort to using untrained, subpar alternatives.
He cuts me a sharp look, and the rest of the class turns to stare at me as though I've done something terrible.
Even though we all know that until a cadet passes the culling, he or she hasn't proven what it takes to function as an agent of Camelot. But these are desperate times indeed.
I meet his eyes calmly. Untrained, subpar alternatives? That's me. And yet without me, the last mission would not have happened at all. On the benches across from me, I see Tarquin and Horatio smirk. Tarquin mouths, subpar.
Every agent needs to be intimately familiar with the Veil. We cannot have undercover agents gawking at it like fools, drawing attention to themselves. This is the reason for the field training mission that leaves this evening.
This field training mission has been almost all anyone has talked about for the past few days. All the cadets and the majority of instructors are leaving on a ship. The plan is to take them on a brief 3-day tour along the Veiled border. Everyone except me. Raphael already let me know that since I'm very familiar with the Veil, there's no point in me going. Instead, he wants to use this time to work on my sentinel magic, preparing me for the culling. And given how foggy my brain has been, having the extra time to prepare isn't the worst thing in the world. We've all been forgoing sleep, cramming maps and information and fey grammar rules into our skulls. I've been helping Serana with her fey language while practicing my lockpicking skills for one of the tests. Serana does her best to help Tana and me with our fighting abilities. I rub my eyes, fighting off the exhaustion. When Rythe lists the cities that the Veil borders, Serana nods off. As her head bobs, I elbow her. She startles awake.
Miss O'Rourke.
Serana blinks blearily.
Yes, sir?
Since you've been so attentive, perhaps you could list 4 cities in France that the Veil's southern border cuts through. Incorrect.
That wasn't... I was just thinking out loud.
I assume thinking out loud is the only way you'd get any thinking done. By the time we leave tonight, I want you to submit to me a paper listing 4 of those cities, with the names of our contacts there and how best to get in touch with them. You too, Miss Melisande, since we all know that ignorance can be quite infectious. That will be all.
Everyone stands up to go to dinner.
That utter wanker.
As we head for the dining hall, I adjust the bag on my shoulder.
The Veil is sort of an inverted U. I'd choose Bordeaux, Poitiers, Bourges, and Marseille or Avignon. And I already know the contact names and everything. We'll do the essay in no time at all.
You're incredible. I was sure it would take hours, and I still need time to pack for the training mission.
How do you manage to keep so bloody calm? Rive is constantly making snide remarks about you. The Pendragons hate all demi-fey, but they're clearly targeting you.
I shrug. The truth is, compared to the Dreamstalker's torments, Rive's barbed remarks don't trouble me at all. I don't care what he thinks. We cross into the majestic chamber, where the sunlight pours through towering windows onto lavishly set tables. The portraits of Queen Guinevere and King Arthur loom over us all. I walk to the cadets' table, doing my best to avoid contact with other people. The last thing I need is more telepathic voices ricocheting in my skull.
I can't wait to see the Veil. I've never seen it before.
I'm excited just to leave Camelot. I haven't stepped out of these walls in a year.
I think I'm gonna miss you guys when I'm all alone in my room.
Serana drops down at a table with empty chairs.
Sure you will. I bet you can't wait to have it all to yourself without my snoring and Tana hogging the bathroom.
I smile at her. She doesn't realize how much I've come to love having friends in my life. Across the hall, I see a woman smiling at me. She's next to a man with platinum blonde hair. Both of them grin and wave. Flustered, I wave back.
Fans of yours?
I don't have fans.
I scoop some wildflower salad onto my plate. It's an Avalon Tower classic of pansies, violets, dandelion leaves, and an elderflower vinaigrette. The main course is wild mushrooms with rice, seasoned with butter and thyme. The rich scent of it makes my stomach rumble. Already my mouth is watering, and my mood brightens. At first, when I went on missions, I was treated with suspicion and jealousy. Tarquin and the Pendragons spread around the term public bus, then Naughty Nia, and a whole host of other names. For months, others in the academy followed the Pendragon's lead, whispering Tarquin's nicknames, sometimes painting them on my door. That changed after the last mission. Now, a different sort of rumor has spread. I don't know how, because everything that happened was supposedly classified. I take a bite of the buttery mushrooms and rice, savoring the faint taste of truffle oil. Tana plucks a fluffy berry pavlova and drops it onto her plate.
And how was Rythe today?
An arsehole. Wouldn't expect anything else of him.
You ready for the big trip, Tana?
Tana isn't going to see the Vale. Like me, she's seen it often enough. But they need her with them to sound the warning in case of danger. The Academy doesn't want to lose their entire year of cadets because they failed to take proper precautions.
Yes, all packed.
Tana gently nudges Serana.
You'll forget to pack your socks, so I already packed some for you.
Well, now that you told me that I'll forget, I'll definitely remember. I like to do the opposite of what people expect.
No, you will not. The cards do not lie.
Her gaze slides back to me.
And speaking of which, I'm still wondering about that lover's card, remember? A lover from the past. It wouldn't be Raphael, would it?
My stomach drops. Sometimes it's deeply inconvenient having a psychic friend.
He's taken, isn't he? Serana, when you first brought me to Raphael's room, Ginevra was in there. And Raphael wasn't wearing a shirt. Aren't romantic relationships strictly forbidden here? Guess we shouldn't tell anyone about it or ever bring it up again.
Serana arches an eyebrow.
Now, what is going on here exactly? You and Raphael?
Don't be ridiculous. He hates me, remember?
Tana narrows her eyes at me.
But you knew him in the past, didn't you? And it wasn't just a friendship.
Me? We were just talking about Ginevra.
You didn't answer my question.
She really doesn't want you to get kicked out for something dumb, like shagging an instructor. You better not lick or otherwise touch him while you're away and you two are alone.
A lover from the past.
Fine. I knew him, yes. Ages ago. It was in Bordeaux, and he kissed me once and then said I was a spoiled American and never spoke to me again until I saw him in the south of France. The day I met you, Tana. He fully ghosted me, and I've never shagged him.
Dickhead! Did you see his knob? I'm just very curious, because I imagine it.
I have not.
Darius rests his chin in his hands.
I'd risk getting kicked out for someone who looks like him, honestly.
Tana's stare is penetrating.
The card suggested that a love from the past is also in your future.
I take a long sip of mead.
Well, anyway, good news, everyone! My headaches are gone. I'm right as rain.
Serana nods.
You're doing that thing again.
Tana grips her glass of mead so hard she's at risk of breaking it.
Okay, you need to be absolutely ready when the tests come, and focused. You cannot fail. You and I have to pass, Nia, and you cannot get kicked out.
I get it. I'm studying as hard as I can. No pressure, right?
Why are you so intense about Nia passing? I mean, we all really need to pass, right? Why are you harassing the poor girl?
Tana, Serana, and I exchange quick glances.
Yeah, Tana is just really worried that Nia will fail the fighting part. But I keep telling her she doesn't need to worry. Nia can kick anyone's ass these days, even the Dreamstalker. At this point, she could thrash a demon of the abyss in a one-on-one fight.
Some demons are actually pacifists and refuse to fight, even when cornered.
Serana's forehead scrunches up.
I was just speaking metaphorically, I guess. There are no demons in the world, Tana.
Her face has gone pale.
Right.
Tana sips from her mead and smiles faintly.
It's better to think that.
Well, that's a thought that's gonna fester.
Anyway, you don't need to worry.
I spear a strawberry with my fork, though I've lost my appetite. Tana's prophecy is stressful enough without her constantly reminding me of it, then adding in a whole bunch of other stressful predictions. The sad truth is, I'm not at the top of my game, and my diametric magic is still wildly unpredictable and out of my control. At least for the upcoming month, I will be out of danger. The only thing I have to do is master every spy skill that exists and memorize the entire Fae history. Darius loses interest in our discussion, his eyes following Nolan, a tall cadet who goes with me to Aemon's advanced class for Fae language. Serana rolls her eyes at me. Darius has been obsessing about Nolan for weeks.
I'll catch up with you girls later.
Darius gets up and walks after Nolan.
I don't get Darius's taste in men. That Nolan guy is nothing special.
I don't know. He looks nice. And he's wicked smart.
I prefer more shoulders on my men.
More than two?
I fish the last bits of salad from my plate. When I look up again, Tana is staring at me. her eyes wide. A feeling of dread sinks into my stomach. What?
The shadows are closing in. Death hunts you. During the trials, the darkness will start to envelop you. If you don't survive, we all die. England is lost. Scotland and Wales, too. The rot will creep from the cliffs of Dover all the way to the Highlands. It starts during the trials.
She takes an enormous bite of her berry pavlova without breaking eye contact as she chews. I'm not sure what's more unnerving, her disturbing prophecy or the way she stares at me as she eats. A cold fear settles over me.